to San Francisco, Monday, October 4th, 1:38 p.m. Flying up on his Gulfstream, Morton brought several of the most prominent celebrity supporters of NERF. These included two rock stars, the wife of a comedian, an actor who played the president on a television series, a writer who had recently run for governor, and two environmental lawyers from other firms. Over white wine and smoked salmon canapes, the discussion became quite lively, focusing on what the United States, as the world's leading economy, should be doing to promote environmental sanity. Uncharacteristically, Morton did not join in. Instead, he slumped in the back of the plane, looking irritable and gloomy. Evans sat beside him, keeping him company. Morton was drinking straight vodka. He was already on his second. "I brought the papers canceling your grant," Evans said, taking them out of his briefcase. "If you still want to do this..."
"I do."
Morton scribbled his signature, hardly looking at the documents. He said,
"Keep those safe until tomorrow."
He looked back at his guests, who were now trading statistics on species loss as the rainforests of the world were cut down. Off to one side, Ted Bradley, the actor who played the president, was talking about how he preferred his electric car, which, he pointed out, he had owned for many years now, to the new hybrids that were so popular.
"There's no comparison," he was saying. "The hybrids are nice, but they're not the real thing."
At the center table, Ann Garner, who sat on the boards of environmental organizations, was arguing that Los Angeles needed to build more public transportation so that people could get out of their cars. Americans, she said, belched out more carbon dioxide than any other people on the planet, and it was disgraceful. Anne was the beautiful wife of a famous attorney, and always intense, especially on environmental issues. Morton sighed. He turned to Evans.
"Do you know how much pollution we're creating right this minute? We'll burn 450 gallons of aviation fuel to take 12 people to San Francisco. Just by making this trip, they're generating more pollution per capita than most people on the planet will generate in a year."
He finished his vodka and rattled the ice in the glass irritably. He handed the glass to Evans, who dutifully signaled for more.
"If there's anything worse than a limousine liberal," Morton said, "it's a Gulfstream environmentalist."
"But George," Evans said, "you're a Gulfstream environmentalist."
"I know it," Morton said. "And I wish it bothered me more. But you know what? It doesn't. I like flying around in my own airplane."
Evans said, "I heard you were in North Dakota and Chicago."
"I was, yes."
"What did you do there?"
"I spent money. A lot of money. A lot."
Evans said, "You bought some art?"
"No, I bought something far more expensive than art. I bought integrity."
"You've always had integrity," Evans said.
"Oh, not my integrity," Morton said. "I bought somebody else's."
Evans didn't know what to say to that. For a minute, he thought Morton was joking.
"I was going to tell you about it," Morton continued. "I got a list of numbers, kid, and I want you to get it to Kenner. It is very much for later. Hello, Ann."
Ann Garner was coming toward them.
"So, George, are you back for a while? Because we need you here now. The Vanuatu lawsuit, which thank God you are backing, and the climate change conference that Nick has scheduled, and it looks so important. My God, George, this is crunch time."
Evan started to stand to let Ann take his seat, but Morton pushed him back down again.
"Ann," he said, "I must say you look more lovely than ever. But Peter and I are having a small business discussion."
She glanced at the papers and Evans's open briefcase.
"Oh, I didn't know I was interrupting."
"No, no, if you just give us a minute."
Of course, I'm sorry.
But she lingered.
This is so unlike you, George, doing business on the plane.
I know, Morton said. But if you must know, I am feeling quite unlike myself these days.
That made her blink. She didn't know how to take it, so she smiled, nodded, and moved away. Morton said,
"She looks wonderful. I wonder who did her work."
Her work?
She's had more in the last few months. I think eyes, maybe chin. Anyway, he said, waving his hand, "About the list of numbers, you are to tell this to no one, Peter. No one. Not anyone in the law firm, and especially not anyone at—"
"George, damn it, why are you hiding back there?" Evans looked over his shoulder and saw Ted Bradley coming toward them. Ted was already drinking heavily, though it was only noon.
"It hasn't been the same without you, George. My God, the world without Bradley is a boring world. Oops! I mean, without George Morton is a boring world. Come on, George, get up out of there. That man is a lawyer. Come and have a drink."
Morton allowed himself to be led away. He glanced over his shoulder at Evans.
"Later," he said.
San Francisco, Monday, October 4th, 9:02 p.m. The grand ballroom of the Mark Hopkins Hotel was darkened for the after-dinner speeches. The audience was elegant, the men in tuxedos, the women in ball gowns. Beneath the ornate chandeliers, the voice of Nicholas Drake boomed from the podium.
"Ladies and gentlemen, it is no exaggeration to say that we face an environmental crisis of unprecedented proportions. Our forests are disappearing. Our lakes and rivers are polluted. The plants and animals that make up our biosphere are vanishing at unprecedented rates. 40,000 species become extinct every year. That's 50 species every single day. At present rates, we will lose half of all our species on our planet in the next few decades. It is the greatest extinction in the history of Earth. And what is the texture of our own lives? Our food is contaminated with lethal pesticides. Our crops are failing from global warming. Our weather is growing worse and more severe. Flooding, droughts, hurricanes, tornadoes, all around the globe. Our sea levels are rising 25 feet in the next century, and possibly more. And most fearsome of all, new scientific evidence points to the specter of abrupt climate change as a result of our destructive behavior. In short, ladies and gentlemen, we are confronted by a genuine global catastrophe for our planet."
Sitting at the center table, Peter Evans looked around at the audience. They were staring down at their plates, yawning, leaning over and talking to one another. Drake wasn't getting a lot of attention.
"They've heard it before," Morton growled.
He shifted his heavy frame and gave a soft belch. He had been drinking steadily through the evening and was now quite drunk. "Loss of biodiversity, shrinking of habitat, destruction of the ozone layer." Nicholas Drake appeared tall and ungainly, his tuxedo ill-fitting. The collar of his shirt was bunched up around his scrawny neck. As always, he gave the impression of an impoverished but dedicated academic, a latter-day Ichabod Crane. Evans thought no one would ever guess that Drake was paid $1/3,000,000 a year to head the fund, plus another $100,000 in expenses, or that he had no science background at all. Nick Drake was a trial attorney, one of five who had started NERF many years before, and like all trial attorneys, he knew the importance of not dressing too well. "The erosion of bioreservoirs, the rise of ever more exotic and lethal diseases—"
"I wish he'd hurry up," Morton said.
He drummed his fingers on the table. Evans said nothing. He had attended enough of these functions to know that Morton was always tense if he had to speak. At the podium, Drake was saying, "Glimmers of hope, faint rays of positive energy, and none more positive and hopeful than the man whose lifelong dedication we are here to honor tonight."
"Can I get another drink?" Morton said, finishing the last of his martini. It was his sixth.
He set the glass on the table with a thud. Evans turned to look for the waiter, raising his hand. He was hoping the waiter wouldn't come over in time. George had had enough.
"For 3 decades, has dedicated his considerable resources and energy to making our world a better, healthier, saner place. Ladies and gentlemen, the National Environmental Resource Fund is proud."
"Ah, screw, never mind," Morton said.
He tensed his body, ready to push back from the table.
"I hate making a fool of myself, even for a good cause."
"Why should you make a fool of—" Evans began.
"My good friend and colleague and this year's concerned citizen, Mr. George Morton."
The room filled with applause, and a spotlight hit Morton as he stood and headed toward the podium, a hunched bear of a man, physically powerful, solemn, head down. Evans was alarmed when Morton stumbled on the first step, and for a moment he feared his boss would fall backward. But Morton regained his balance, and as he stepped to the stage he seemed all right. He shook hands with Drake and moved to the podium, gripping it on both sides with his large hands. Morton looked out at the room, turning his head from side to side, surveying the audience. He did not speak. He just stood there and said nothing. Ann Garner, sitting beside Evans, gave him a nudge.
"Is he all right?"
"Oh, yes, absolutely," Evans said, nodding. But in truth, he wasn't sure.